This is episode 291 of the Wrestling Brethren podcast. I'm your host, Josh Wiener, along with Seth Zillman and Jared Aubrey. And on this episode, we will be discussing the wrestling news of the week, and we will preview AEW Forbidden Door. Hey, yo, Jay Will, get us started.
What up? This is Josiah Williams, and you're listening to the Wrestling Brethren podcast, where wrestling and pop culture collide. Yeah.
Welcome into episode 291. We are here going to be looking at Forbidden Door. As we mentioned previously, no predictions, no changes on the scoreboard. But we can at least talk about some of these dream matches and fun matches that we're going to get at the pay-per-view. But first, before we get to that and before we get to the news, Seth, Jarrett, how the hell are you?
Well, we're officially now in summer, and I know last week the news broke that Vince McMahon was being investigated for money being spent for shady dealings. But Raw and SmackDown this past week both did monster numbers afterwards. So I've just been informed that WWE will now require everybody on the roster to get investigated, and, you know, just to boost those ratings.
Vince equals ratings. I do have to point something out, though. We talk about the weather quite frequently when we do this, and, you know, folks, Canada is not just a winter wonderland. As Seth said, we have kicked off summer. And yesterday here in balmy Winnipeg, 112 degrees Fahrenheit. Thank you very much. The myth has been busted.
So it's actually hotter there than it was here. I know it's hard for me to talk about the weather without remembering REM song Pop Song 89, where they have it in their chorus. I think, should we talk about the weather?
I don't think anybody's ever said balmy and Winnipeg together.
Hey, I'm breaking ground always, Josh. This is why this is must listen to.
Yeah. Breaking news. It's hot in Winnipeg in the summer. Who knew?
In winter, it's colder than the moon, and in summer, it's hotter than the desert.
That should be on a shirt. Or promotional material, travel arrangements.
Yeah, I'll get on the horn with Tourism Winnipeg. We'll get on that.
There you go. All right, well, let's get things kicked off with the wrestling news of the week. All right, well, as we recorded last episode, of course, big news breaks the day after. Subsequent information of said news has trickled out as we go on day by day. But last week it was reported that the board of directors of WWE, via reported by the Wall Street Journal, I want to say, that the board of directors was investigating Vince and Kennedy McMahon for $3 million payout to a former employee who turned out to be a paralegal, not anybody on the talent roster, as people loved to speculate on social media. And so this broke on Wednesday of last week, and then by the time we got to Friday, it was announced that Vince McMahon was stepping away from his CEO and chairman duties while this investigation was ongoing. But he would remain in charge of creative. So thank God for that. But then it was also announced that Stephanie McMahon was appointed the interim CEO and chairwoman of WWE. And all that reminded me of was Bobby Valentine, who at the time was a manager for the New York Mets, and he got ejected from a baseball game, but he went into the locker room, pulled out one of those fake glasses with a fake nose on it and a mustache, and that was his disguise, and he came back into the dugout and continued getting information out to the temporary manager for the rest of the game, and he thought he was, you know, slick and being sneaky. So that's all this reminds me of, is that Vince is still going to call the shots. He's just going to, you know, be in the shadows and basically making all the decisions through Stephanie. Now, whether or not that's true or not, I don't know. That's just what I imagined in my mind. The problem,
I think that creative will just be getting notes from a higher power.
Yeah. A cloaked figure. Yeah. Also, in trying to think of the right terminology here, also implicated in this investigation was John Laurinaitis, who has since been put on administrative leave, and his duties as head of talent relations have been passed off to Bruce Pritchard. So while the talent is happy that Laurinaitis is probably not going to be coming back due to the severity of these allegations, they're not real thrilled that the person who is in charge of creative, or at least one of the top right-hand men for creative, is now also in charge of the talent.
I love you.
Yeah. So
people power.
I have a feeling that this is going to be one of those stories where it's going to get worse for Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis before it gets better. Because I guarantee you there wasn't just one incident of this happening. And I'm willing to bet that this investigation uncovers a plethora of similar cases. And this could be the thing that is the downfall of Vince McMahon. Not necessarily WWE, but Vince McMahon. And that would be shocking news, but not surprising news. So what are your guys' thoughts on all this that has come down in the last week?
I think you put it best that it's shocking, but not necessarily surprising. Here's the thing. I'm not necessarily saying that anybody's been making these claims, but it's one of the things that I've seen people say over the years about the investigation. My understanding, and of course I am not a lawyer, don't play one on a podcast or TV or anything like that. My understanding is the investigation has nothing to do with any affair that happened. I don't think anybody's denying that a romantic or sexual affair happened. What is the potential problem is whether Vince used his own money, which the story that I've heard when it came to like the $3 million or whatever hush money, that was his own personal funds. People can call that a dirty tactic or being sleazy. Okay. But there's nothing illegal about that. Where the illegal stuff comes in was that this person apparently got her salary doubled after engaging in these, times with Vince. I'm trying to keep it clean here, folks, but allegedly her salary doubled because of her affair with Vince. And when you're releasing talent because you say you don't have the budget for them, and there's all these budget cuts, but you're doubling the salary of somebody who works in the office to now make as much, if not more, than some of the boys are making, that doesn't look very good, certainly on paper. So that's my understanding as far as what this is about. It's not really the affair itself. It's whether there was actual corporate funds being used to cover up these shenanigans, shall we say. So, and as far as Bruce Pritchard, I know he's been there forever, off and on, pretty much. I mean, he's when he's left, he's come back, because I know he worked for Impact for a while as well. And I know he knows the WWE business model very well, but I don't know what experience he has working with talent relations. And as some would know, that was Jim Ross's old job back in the 90s. And it's what John Laurinaitis was doing for a while before he left and then came back. And I don't know if that was around the time he married the Bella's mother. But this also is not making John Laurinaitis look very good, because he apparently was also engaging in these extramarital affairs, so to speak. And again, I don't think it's so much the affairs themselves as it is whether money was being used to cover stuff up. So we'll see where it goes. Naturally, this is the type of tabloid stuff that I think just kind of keeps interest in the general public, because I've been hearing Vince McMahon's name a lot more in mainstream press than I usually do. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes.
So I've been following this, and a lot of what Seth has just said is the way I understand it as well. That all being said, like, we all know Vince McMahon is a piece of shit, right? He's a man that has oodles and oodles of money, and he flaunts his power and all that.
Send your 10,000 word blog post to JaredObby5150 on Twitter.
Well, like, even go back to, you know, the time of Divas, right? And he was doing stuff like, you know, having Trish Stratus bent over and barking like a dog, right? It's just stuff to satisfy the guy's ego. So yes, none of this is surprising or probably even shocking. I thought the shocking part is when he actually stepped down as CEO for the time of the investigation. Now, there's one point I wanted to bring up from what you said, Seth, and right, we're talking about whether corporate funds were used. So as far as the hush money, the $3 million, whatever the number is, I believe it was $3 million, that's been purported that that's Vince's money and not WWE money, which, okay, fine. So I've yet to hear anything illegal. And then you talked about the salary jump. Now, and you use the word illegal there. Can we even say that that is illegal? Because you could have a file in this lady's HR documents going, oh, she was an outstanding employee. She delivered this project. She did this. She did that. Whatever. I gave her a raise. Is that even illegal? We all know that, you know, it was because she was bumping uglies with Vince, but there's ways around that corporately, right? So can they even get him on that? We well know his extramarital activities.
Miracle.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm having trouble like Josh said. I can't put these big words together. We all know, but all, like, we've read all of the adventures that he's had. We know he's that's no question. I'm still struggling to find anything technically illegal. There may be something in the WWE corporate statutes or bylaws or something that they're going to get them on a technicality perhaps, but I've failed to see or read or hear of anything that is downright illegal, is going to land the man in jail, for example. And this is just yeah, he's a piece of garbage, and now, yeah, he got caught. But what's going to happen? I don't think anything. I think he's stepped down for a while. The investigation happens. I think you're right that he will probably continue to run the company through Stephanie. I don't think there's going to be a large, she's going to step in and do all these major changes until the investigation's over. And I think it will be business as usual once this is all over.
The terminology used was misappropriation of funds. And that, as was said, that had to do with her salary. Whether or not she has any paperwork that justifies the quote-unquote raise, I'm sure that's part of the investigation and what they're looking into. Why it's taking so long is anyone's guess. But additionally, I've heard that the board of directors has, I think, either, I'm probably not going to get this right, but either 80% like vote or something about 80% where they could, if they chose to, have Vince removed from everything, WWE altogether, should they come to that conclusion. Regardless of the investigation, and if they look into this deeper and find more similar instances, they could remove him. And so technically, Vince's fate is in the hands of the board of directors. So I find that interesting as well. And just lastly on this topic, before we switch and move on to something else, I came across an account on TikTok that is interesting, and I haven't looked into this any further than the one video that I saw, so I'm not saying that she has made any complaints, or I'm not saying she's related to this or tied to this whatsoever. I just found the video interesting. Her name on TikTok is Nice Girl Julie. And her profile says she was a WWE writer and now has her own podcast. Again, I have not looked into this anything beyond the video, but I wanted to play this short audio clip just to give you guys an idea of potentially other similar cases. Potentially.
WWE was a dream job for me. I loved getting to write for The Iconics and Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan and Lana and Kairi Sane and Zelina Vega. And probably in my entire career, I was never happier than when I got my assignments for the week and got to spend the entire day pitching ideas and writing and rewriting and getting feedback and rewriting again. The bad parts were the worst in my career ever. And it seemed really clear to me that the people who had the power to do something at WWE were not interested in preventing these bad things from happening. I made the choice to leave. And these allegations, they don't happen in a vacuum. This is the result of a culture within an organization.
So it would appear, again, without looking into this any further than that clip, it would appear that she's speaking about her own time there and mentions allegations and that they don't happen in a vacuum, meaning that there's more than one. So it will be interesting to see what is leaked, reported, founded in the next coming days, weeks, for however long this drags on.
Yeah, just further to your point, Josh, about the board and the 80% and whatever the number is, that is the risk that you take when you take your company public, right? As a private organization, Vince can do whatever he wants. He doesn't answer to anybody. When you go public and you've got a board, you run the risk of getting taken out by votes by the board, right? And that's not a wrestling thing. That's I've been part of any organization I've been in that's been public. You can lose your own company. So you're right. Regardless of whether anything illegal actually happened or whether corporate funds were used or were not used, the board could simply decide that we don't need this headache, we don't need this PR nightmare. They could decide to remove him, right? So that's always a risk.
They could take him out. Pew, pew. All right, next news item. Sasha Banks reportedly released from her WWE contract. There were attorneys involved, but it is unknown and not confirmed at this time about any non-compete clause, whether there is one still in play or not. This has also not been confirmed by WWE publicly. Anybody who has been asked about it or spoken to internally believes that she is officially gone. And WWE did their best in their worst attempt, but they did their best to digitally erase her from a sign in the crowd on SmackDown. There was a sign clearly right smack dab in the middle of the hard cam view that said Sasha Crew for life. And if you go to WWE.com and look at the photos from SmackDown, there is a giant white poster board that is blank because they digitally removed that sign
from all the things picture. To change it to just blank. You know? Yep.
It will be interesting. Now the watch is on. If nothing gets announced or confirmed publicly, the question will be, where will she turn up? Will she magically show up at Forbidden Door? Will she show up at All Out? Will she show up at Against All Odds? Or whatever the next NWA pay-per-view is? It will be interesting. The Mercedes watch is officially on.
The main thing for me with Sasha Banks, and I've seen it in the reaction with other casual fans that I know and people who don't watch wrestling regularly, when the subject comes up, because I have friends who watched her in The Mandalorian, because of course she was in the second season of Mandalorian, and I thought she was pretty good in that. And when I was telling people that, oh yeah, she's a wrestler for WWE, she wrestles under the name Sasha Banks, and pretty much universally the reaction is, her name is Mercedes, and they decided they had to change her name. You know, but that kind of goes back to the whole, you know, they can't use their real name type thing. My understanding is that she negotiated for a full release, like something without any sort of 90-day clause attached to it, or at least her agent or her lawyer did. I don't know where she would wind up. I mean, it's very possible she could show up in AEW or Impact or whatever. But it will be interesting to see what is actually done with her after that, because depending on who you listen to, you know, there are people that were defending her and there were people that were saying that what she did was silly and the whole nine yards. So I think we'll find out as far as whether what she did was right or whether what she did was silly. We'll probably find out after we see her surface wherever she surfaces, if that makes any sense. I mean, if we still hear problems with whatever companies she works with after WWE, you know, that's one thing. Or if we never hear of her walking out on a show again for whatever company she works for after WWE, you know, I hope that makes sense with what I'm saying here.
You're saying she's trying to earn a perfect attendance award.
I don't know. For me, it's kind of so long. It's like I've gotten the idea that, you know, do I want this person in my locker room? And that goes for any company she may decide to want to sign with, and if they want to look at her. I mean, we don't have the whole story, right? And we probably never will. We'll get a quote unquote pipe bomb promo from her from wherever she shows up. If she does, we'll get her version of it. I don't know if WWE will get a version of it. Somewhere in the middle of those sides is going to be the truth. But I mean, you've got a repeatable pattern here, and it's like, I would probably just rather not take the risk, but yeah, she'll end up somewhere.
Well, she'll be on Talk Is Jericho, I guarantee you. But here's the thing. I don't feel that she's persona non grata a la Tessa Blanchard. So I have a feeling she would get snapped up in an instant, assuming she still wants to wrestle. And knowing things that I do about her based on what has been told to us, I can't imagine that she just all of a sudden didn't care about it anymore. She just may have been disenfranchised with WWE. And if she was able to have her attorneys negotiate a full release without a non-compete clause, that is a slippery slope, because the next person or persons that want their release and don't get it will be on the phone to Sasha for the number to her attorney. So that's going to be interesting moving forward. And possibly that may even be why WWE has not made this public, because they don't want anybody to get any bright ideas moving forward.
I'm like Seth. I'm going to say this. I'm not a lawyer. And I don't play one on TV or on a podcast. But if I'm WWE, it's like, we have a contract. Right. So, and like you said, if this is true, and whoever her agent, lawyer, whoever it is, has negotiated some deal, that is going to set a very, very perhaps deadly precedent, right? What happens when, I don't know, I'm just going to throw a name out. I don't think there's any problems. What happens when Roman wants to go and he's got 4 years left on a big contract? He's like, nope, I want out. Molly Rappi did it for Sasha, do it for me too. I don't know. That's dangerous, folks.
It's all about the precedents you don't want set.
Right.
All right. Next topic. Last week on SmackDown, we got one of Roman Reigns' three summertime title defenses that have been quote unquote promised to us. So it was on free TV, Roman Reigns versus Riddle. And I felt it was a great match. And pay-per-view quality, obviously, should have been Money in the Bank, but they did it on free TV instead, probably because Money in the Bank was moved away from the stadium and into an arena. So, which is hilarious because SmackDown was at an arena also, so I don't know what their logic is there. At the end of the match, Roman Reigns cut a promo stating that that's everybody. I've beaten them all. I've beaten everybody. So I'm just going to go back to the private island and kick it. And then they had the music of one Brocketh Lesnar again. So Brock is back.
What year is it?
And he F5s Roman, makes him look stupid by offering a handshake, and Roman accepts it to get yanked into the F5. Stevie Wonder saw that coming. And then he F5s Jimmy and Jay as well. And now this is the, as I've dubbed it, this is the panic reaction to Randy Orton needing back surgery, reportedly, and will be out for the rest of 2022, which is awful for Randy. But this is their panic booking. And it's already been announced that Brock is taking Randy's spot, which was supposed to be at SummerSlam. And we are getting Brock versus Roman, quote unquote, one last time, which I do not believe based on previous once in a lifetime marketing bullshit, but they will be facing off in a last man standing match.
Yeah. This kind of goes back to the talk earlier about Bruce Pritchard, because it seems like when the company is dealt a curveball, or when they think they need to spice things up, they go to the past. Because they don't seem to have the patience to build up characters of the future, especially baby faces. Now I get it. You know, Randy Orton's hurt. Cody got hurt. You know, Cody was probably going to have that number one baby face spot. I get that. And it's an unfortunate curveball. But all you have to do is look at how they treated Riddle after that match. Because that match, if I understand it right, actually did very good numbers. They were getting over like 2.5 million people watching that match on SmackDown. And it was a very good match. You know, like I think I said in the off mic in the text back and forth, it's like everybody knew that Riddle was not winning that match. But yet, me personally, at least, I still got sucked into some of the near falls. So, you know, that shows that the drama's there. But after he got beat, what happened on Monday? He loses in like 3 minutes to Omos. And it's like not even a competitive match. Omos basically just beats him. So just snuff him out like he didn't even matter. But yet, hey, they got Brock coming in. So it's one of the problems that they've had forever is they do not have the patience to have baby faces ready, willing, and able. They're probably willing, but they don't have baby faces ready to take that next step up to being the main or semi-main. I mean, I guess they got Drew. Drew McIntyre, but they were saving that for the UK show. So they have this conundrum of they have this dominant heel champion, but they don't have any baby faces that they've built up in the last year or two. So they got to go back to the well with the Brock Lesnar here. And it'll be interesting to see what the feedback is from the WWE diehards, because they were defending it before about how, well, now Roman's the baby face and or Roman's the heel and Brock's the baby face. So somehow that makes everything totally different. We'll see if they say the same thing now.
Yeah, just for me, I just don't want to see this match again. We've had it, what, three or four big matches between the two in the last few years. I mean, you can't tell me that there's nobody on the roster that they could have stuffed into a spot to have a match with Roman. Like, I mean, like you just mentioned Drew McIntyre, and like you said, you know, we wanted to save that one, but why not give somebody on the roster a shot? I don't know. We just saw Roman beat Brock twice recently. And I mean, you can keep going to the well. And yeah, Brock's going to pop a crowd when he shows up after a few months off. But you just know, like, this is like the match with really, you just know Roman's winning this match. Like, there's no drama to it whatsoever. You know the result. So why not at least make a surprise or give somebody that's there a shot and give them that spotlight and give them a chance to prove themselves. And if they do, well, geez, somebody just had, you know, a great match with Roman Reigns and, you know, maybe we should give that option. Now maybe you found someone that you're going to build and we can go back and talk about this time and time and time again. They don't, and it's not that they don't have, they just haven't taken the chance taken the opportunity to build someone on. It goes back to the show we did about booking how to beat Roman or who's going to beat Roman. They don't have anyone built up and they're not building anyone else up on. Yeah, Cody's hurt. That sucks. Randy's hurt. That sucks. But you tell me they're only invested in two people as someone that could possibly dethrone Roman. Are you kidding? So yeah, they've got a lot of work to do on building up new stars. That's for sure.
I don't know what you guys are talking about because they have a plethora of people. Just go and look at Keith carrying Alistair. Adam Cole.
Johnny Gargano.
Well, damn. And another branch off of this story tree, there has been more subtle bloodline storytelling. One I've just put together myself from a real life occurrence, and the other one is slightly subtle, but at least tied to the current storyline. And I'll start with that one. Solo Sikoa has been spotted off camera starting to use the We The Ones arm gesture in NXT. So it would be nice if he would, get scouted and brought up and join the bloodline with the rest of the family. The real life situation that I just put together myself that can be used for storyline in the future is The Rock bought Tamina a new house, and Tamina is his cousin, also Roman's cousin. And what is it called, Jarrett, when you take care of somebody, when you have a family member and you do something for them, you, in this case, buying them a new house, what's that called?
I'm just laughing so hard because this is so obvious.
Is it providing for your family? I think that's something that the head of the table spouted off for, that the reason why he does all this is because he's providing for his family when no one else does. But here's The Rock providing a new house for his cousin Tamina. So that can be tied into the storyline in the future. But will they actually do that? Depends on if Paul Heyman and Roman and Rock are writing the story, but it's something to look forward to.
I don't know if it'll ever become an on-screen part of it, but even if it does, I mean, it looks like if there's ever the Rock-Roman confrontation, obviously Roman still being the heel, but then it brings to the whole thing of, okay, well, if Rock wins, then you haven't built, then is it actually building anybody? And if Roman wins, who beats him after that?
That's the whole point of the discussion I just had.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be doing that now. So when Roman beats Rock at WrestleMania, they have the next contender ready, but they're not listening to us.
Yeah. You know?
We should do an episode. Oh. I feel like WWE is so behind in everything. All right, transitioning to some sadder news. Referees Dave Hebner and Tim White passed away last weekend. Dave Hebner was 73. Tim White was 68. You may remember Tim White was the quote-unquote handler for Andre the Giant, one of his best friends, and his career in ring as a referee actually came to an end at Judgment Day 2002 during a Hell in a Cell match between Triple H and Chris Jericho, when there was a spot where Jericho was supposed to throw Tim White into the cell, and Tim White asked Jericho to throw me as hard as you possibly can because he wanted it to look real. Well, Jericho did that and unfortunately injured his shoulder and ended his in-ring career as a referee, but he became a backstage agent and producer and worked for WWE until 2009. Dave Hebner, you might remember from making his WWE debut in 1988 as part of the Crooked Referee storyline during the Main Event match, and that's Main Event, the TV show, not the last match on the card, but between Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan for the World Heavyweight Championship. This is where Andre quote-unquote won the title before surrendering it to Ted DiBiase, and then it was revealed that Dave and Earl Hebner were twins, and the dual referee angle was played out. So condolences to the Hebner family and to the White family.
Yeah. I mean, that I think that was the first big wrestling show that I actually watched for the first time. I have memories of a few things before that here and there, like the Saturday Night's Main Event when Piper attacked Iron Sheik with a crutch. I have memories of that. But that was probably the first like big feeling event that I tried to watch live, because it was in prime time. So it was easy for me to tune into it. And, that whole thing, I didn't quite feel it at the time because I hadn't been watching wrestling that much, but I remember hearing Brian and Vinny review it on their show, and they summed it up perfectly as far as kind of the reaction, because Hogan had been the champion for like 4 years. And it's like all of a sudden we're in a world where Hulk Hogan is not the champion. But will the sun come up tomorrow? Will there be food? What kind of world are we going to be in now that Hulk Hogan's not the champion? You know, it's kind of how a little kid thinks back then. So yeah, one of the most memorable things of all time. It seems like Earl, I think, did more the refereeing than Dave did, but it's always bad to hear about good people passing and what a memorable career. So yeah, thoughts, prayers, and condolences to his family.
I still remember watching that match where Hogan got screwed very vividly. I think I was like only 13 at the time, and I had at that point, I was not, you know, smart in any way when it came to wrestling. And I was full on Hogan fanboy, and I just remember that the pin got countered, and Hogan had his foot up on the rope, and the pin got counted anyway.
It was a shoulder. It was a shoulder, I think. His shoulder was up.
Was it really? I thought it was his foot got on the rope.
Yeah, I think his shoulder was up because like it was like right when he went down. I think Hogan. I don't know what kind of TV did you watch it on. I had the like a 13-inch that's got the big turn dial that went clunk 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 with each channel change.
I could be messing stuff up. I'm not sure it was a foot, but yeah. What I vividly remember was my reaction. I was like, oh my god! Like he wasn't pinned. That's not possible. Like Hogan's what? He shifts to be chat. And I was actually upset as a kid watching this. Right. And that's the point I'm trying to get across is that, you're just so invested as a kid. And that was a huge deal. That was a huge match. And that storyline was a monster at that point. Yeah. So his involvement, definitely a big part of wrestling history.
We should probably do a flashback episode to that show.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something to consider.
Hey, that's a cool idea. Maybe watch some old stuff and then we comment on it.
Because on that undercard for the 1 hour or whatever it was, 90 minutes, was Randy Savage versus the Honky Tonk Man. So a classic there too. All right, next item. John Cena is set to appear on Monday Night Raw this Monday, June 27th, to commemorate 20 years in WWE, and damn if that doesn't make you feel old. But he is rumored to set up a match with Theory at SummerSlam. Thoughts?
I will admit I have a measure of interest into how that match will turn out, because I'm not sure they would bring back Cena just to beat him, but... do you put the title back on Cena? Then what happens? Or maybe they'll find some reason for Theory to lose the title before then. I don't know, but it'll be interesting to see the reaction, especially ratings and such, when Cena goes away. Because I'm assuming he'll probably be back again for Mania time. But again, it goes back to the... where is the next generation babyface that they're going to have step up and be the full-time top hero?
Well, John always talked highly of Cesaro.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All these solutions just don't work there anymore.
Yeah. Apparently the problem with Cesaro's nipples or something like that.
Oh, dear God. Oh, yeah, this match. I couldn't care less about... Theory and Cena. I can't stand Theory. It's like Cena's gonna come back and he'll look exactly the same. He's gonna cut the same promo. This is where I belong. This is my home. I've never left. Blah blah blah.
It's like missionary position, night after night after. Oh, come on, John.
Yeah, and it's the whole thing of the name. It's just like. At SummerSlam, you are going to be facing Theory. What Theory? Theory of Gravity? You know, Theory of Evolution? What kind of Theory?
The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. Although a debate between Sheldon and John Cena could actually be pretty interesting, depending on what the subject is.
All right, next topic. Rhea Ripley injured. Not medically cleared to participate and therefore pulled from her title match at Money in the Bank. According to Rhea's Instagram, she is suffering from mouth and brain injuries. No further details have been provided. Her mouth injury, she actually had to have dental surgery, and it looks like she's wearing like a retainer or Invisalign or something. To keep her teeth together. brain injury is new. She didn't say concussion. She literally said brain injury. So I don't know what that's about. Hopefully, you know, she'll recover soon and be back into the title picture, because I was all ready and set to predict her to win the Raw Women's title, because I feel like Bianca's reign has just been super bland and she was better in the chase position. But that has been kiboshed, and so we'll have to wait speedy recovery to Rhea Ripley, hoping that brain injury is not too serious.
I'm trying to think what brain injury there could be aside from a concussion. I mean, are they just barred from saying the name concussion? Because brain injury actually sounds worse than concussion, because concussion is the type of thing, okay, well, we can deal with it. You know, we can treat it. Brain injury actually sounds worse than concussion does, at least to me. So, but yeah, all the best to her. Quick and speedy recovery. And hopefully all will be well.
Yeah, like you guys, I had her pegged to beat Bianca. It looks like they were finally getting behind her in this new role in Judgment Day. Yeah, so this sucks. Yeah, I hope she recovers soon. We need her back on top.
Last topic for the news before we get into discussing Forbidden Door. A retirement tour has been announced for the Great Muta. There's a handful of dates, with more being added eventually by Pro Wrestling Noah. His final date is January 22nd, 2023 at the Yokohama Arena, billed as the Great Muta Final Bye-Bye.
He was one of the guys that I remember seeing way, way back. I'm guessing it was probably after that Hogan-Andre match, just going by numbers on paper. But his career has been second to none. He elevated New Japan and All Japan to new heights. I am curious to hear what all of his matches are going to be, because he said it's going to be five big matches that he's going to have, because one of the matches, both in his and the other's opinion, have been one of the best things to happen to either, was the feud he had with Sting in around 89 or 90. You know, they kind of helped put each other on the map. So I can't help but wonder if one of those matches is going to be with Sting. The funny thing is, I think Sting's actually older than Muta is. But even if they are old guys kind of limping around, I don't want to say I hate to say it, but I'll still watch that. I'm sure they'll make it dramatic, but if anything, for just the decades of history that they had, it'll be interesting to see. So I hope one of those matches is with Sting at least.
Well, that's a huge name ready to retire, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I always associate, because, you know, as a youth, I didn't know anything about New Japan, but I always associated him with WCW because that's where I saw him on TV. So I mm-hmm. just thought he was WCW guy. I'm surprised he's still working, to tell you the truth.
He was running 0-1 promotion for a while.
Yeah, I know he had that match in NXT with Tyler Breeze several years ago, and I thought he was getting ready to retire at that time. So the fact that he's still going is admirable. All right, let us talk about AEW and New Japan presenting Forbidden Door. Hoping after this pay-per-view they stop using that fucking terminology, because I'm tired of hearing it. So we're not going to do this like we would normally do for predictions, where I go match by match and thoughts, match and thoughts, match and thoughts. I'm going to run down the entire card, botching names left and right, And Seth, you'll probably know more about this than Jared and I will, but at least Jared and I will be able to chime in about the, at least the AEW side, if not for who we do know from New Japan. So I will do this from the bottom to the top. There will be one more match announced after we record on Friday's Rampage, whether or not it is for the buy-in pre-show, which would be the second match, or if it'll be a actual match on the card, is to be determined. We don't have to circle back to it because it's not being predicted. So I will go with the card that we have as of this very moment. So for Forbidden Door, the buy-in pre-show, Max Caster and the Gun Club will take on Team New Japan's Dojo of Yuya Uemura, Alex Coughlin, the DKC, and Kevin Knight. On the main show, Zack Sabre Jr. will take on TBA, mystery opponent handpicked by Bryan Danielson, who announced that he is injured and will be out for Forbidden Door, and he has selected the only man he trusts to be able to replace him. I will circle
Kane.
Back.
Oh, no.
I will circle back to that later because I do want to bring up the funniest line from Dynamite. But moving on, Chris Jericho, Minoru Suzuki, and Sammy Guevara will take on Eddie Kingston, Shota Umino, and Wheeler Yuta. The Bullet Club, comprised of the Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson, Hikuleo, and El Fantasmo will take on the team dubbed, no, this is not 1990 WCW, but the Dudes with Attitude, Darby Allin, Sting, and Shingo Takagi, and Hiromu Takahashi in a 8-man tag. For the IWGP United States Heavyweight title match, in a match you never thought you would see, Orange Cassidy challenges Will Ospreay. In the only match that does not involve a New Japan participant, and that's because it is a women's match, for the AEW Women's World title, Thunder Rosa defends against Toni Storm. In a winners-take-all triple threat tag team titles match where the winners will leave with the Ring of Honor and IWGP tag team titles. Ring of Honor champions FTR versus IWGP tag team champions the United Empire of Jeff Cobb and Great O'Khan versus Roppongi Vice, Trent Beretta, and Rocky Romero. In a fatal four-way for the inaugural AEW All-Atlantic title, Miro takes on Pac, takes on Malakai Black, and recently, as of earlier tonight, Clark Connors has been injected into this match as Ishii has been injured in his match where he defeated Clark Connors to make this match, so they just replaced him with the runner-up. In a fatal four-way for the IWGP World Heavyweight title, Jay White defends against Kazuchika Okada, Adam Cole, and Hangman Adam Page. And in what will likely be the main event for the interim AEW World title, Jon Moxley takes on the ace of New Japan, Hiroshi Tanahashi, where the winner not only becomes the interim AEW World Champion, but will face CM Punk at a later date to unify the titles.
There's definitely a lot of talent in all those matches. And I know that I could probably go down and give my predictions here and there, but we're not doing predictions. The matches that I probably have the most interest in are probably the main event, just because I like Tanahashi. I like Jon Moxley. The tag team match, I'm assuming FTR are going to win. But there's definitely going to be a lot of high spots, a lot of dives and such. And The other main one that I'm probably looking at is the match with Sting, Darby, and then Shingo Takagi and Hiromu Takahashi, because Hiromu Takahashi is one of those guys that he seems to be like the daredevil cruiserweight that just kind of kills himself in every match. And he's good, don't get me wrong, but I think the guy's already had to take like a year and a half off because of a neck injury from all the big dives he was taking. And Shingo Takagi is one of those guys where he's probably the cruiserweight by weight, but he's physically bigger than the smaller guys. So it's like you put him in the ring with cruiserweights and he's the big, strong power guy. You put him in the ring with heavyweights and he can still do the speed and the agility moves. And I've said before that he looks like the type of wrestler, like if you were playing a fighting game, like a Street Fighter or something like that, and you saw a guy that looked like him, you might be inclined to pick him just by how badass he looks. So it'll be interesting to see how that match goes out. And the Dudes with Attitudes line, I think, was pretty good. So I know I'm probably a little bit more pumped for this than you guys are just because I've been following the New Japan stuff. But I will admit that the go-home impact – or the the go-home Dynamite, I think they had way too much on one show there because they were trying to introduce all these New Japan guys. And it was fine for me because I could follow all of them. I knew the background in all of them. But if you'd never seen Zack Sabre Jr. before, what is there to care about? He didn't even cut a promo. Now, one thing about Zack Sabre Jr. and Will Ospreay is some of the names, I don't know if they'll be said because I can't picture Jim Ross saying some of these names, but one of Zack Sabre Jr.'s finishers, I think he has like nine finishers according to prowrestling.fandom.com. Most of them are submissions, so expect to see a lot of submissions with him, and whether it's with Gargano or Cesaro or whoever. But one of them is a double wrist clutch octopus hold. And here is the name of the move. Quote, hurrah, another year. Surely this one will be better than the last. The inexorable march of progress will lead us all to happiness. Unquote. That's the name of the move. I don't think we're probably going to be hearing that announced. But Will Ospreay, he does a lot of cutters. His Stormbreaker is kind of a DDT. T variant, like it goes from a backbreaker. I'm assuming it's a Marvel reference because it's Thor's second hammer. Thor's hammer that's not Mjolnir is called Stormbreaker. So we'll see if all those get mentioned. So I'm looking forward to it. Curious to hear what you guys think.
I know little or next to nothing about it and about New Japan. I do know some of the names, and I know that they're outstanding wrestlers, but I don't know their bodies of work. I don't know their storylines. I don't know their histories. But I know it's going to be a night of great wrestling. I am looking forward to this new title match simply because the returning Miro is in it. And I want to see him smash things. But yeah, I'm just looking forward to being entertained.
I think AEW and their pay-per-views are the new, well, not new, that's been well established. They're the takeovers now where they just don't put on a bad show. This one will be no different. The whole thing with Bryan Danielson naming his replacement in what was the best line on Dynamite, which God love him, because I feel so bad for him, because one of the reasons he signed with AEW was to get to New Japan matches, and here's the prime opportunity. Yeah. And he can't even do it now. But he said that he's hand selected the only man he trusts to be able to do technical wrestling with Zack Sabre Jr. and then to kick in Chris Jericho's head in Blood and Guts. And so he says, who is that person? And the crowd starts doing the New Day, who thing. And Brian goes, you want me to tell you who? If in case you didn't notice, I came out of the bad guy tunnel. I'm not going to tell you. And that was just, that popped me. That was so great. So thus insinuating that Zack Sabre Jr. will find out with everybody else at the pay-per-view.
I can't help but think that Cesaro, the former Cesaro, I guess he'd probably be back to being Claudio Castagnoli. He'd probably be the most likely candidate. Other than that, I mean, Jonathan Gresham, I think, would be good for, because of the matchup with Zack Sabre, but I'm not sure how well he would adapt to the Blood and Guts War Games. So there's a couple of names it could be. I'm not sure who it will be, but if I was a betting man, I'd probably say it was going to be the former Cesaro.
Yeah, that's probably the easy bet. I would love if it was Gargano. I know we're trying to piece together his timeline because he did say he was going to be in Chicago, but I'm only going to be there for 8 hours and I'm there in the morning signing autographs. I don't know. It's he said, you know, only 5% of you are going to believe me, but I know I'm holding out hope.
That tweet that Jared is referencing, he posted on Twitter this Sunday, June 26th, I'll be in Chicago at the Chicago Cars Show signing autographs in the morning. And then he pimps the website and the, you know, the poster and everything. And then he replies to himself saying, I promise you this is ridiculously coincidental and has been booked for months. I'll only be in Chicago for like 8 hours, which is not an exact amount of time. I also realize in saying this that only 5% of you are going to believe I'm actually telling the truth, laughing emoji. Well, if you're only going to be there for like 8 hours, guess what's kicking off the pay-per-view? Zack Sabre Jr. versus TBA. So we'll have to see. If it's not him, then I would definitely say Cesaro. I don't want it to be a Ring of Honor guy because I'm not really keen on that roster. My 1A and my 1B is Cesaro and Gargano.
I am definitely interested to see what Jared thinks of Okada because I know, obviously, Josh, when we went to see All In, Okada was in a match there. But I probably said it before, Jared, but it bears repeating. One of the best dropkicks you'll ever see. His dropkick could be a finisher, for crying out loud. That's how great his dropkick is.
Nice.
I do think that probably the only title change, and that's change, not winning, so I'm not counting the main event, but I think the only title change will be the tag team titles. I would love it if Tony Storm defeated Thunder Rosa, but I think Tony Khan sees more in her than the general fan base. I think Thunder, much like Bianca Belair, was better in the chase position. But we'll have to see what transpires. Any final thoughts, gentlemen?
Yeah, I agree. There's probably not going to be that many title changes. I think the tag team titles are going to change. I think FTR is walking out with both the belts, but there's not a single match on here that looks like a bad match. Now the match with you and Romero and all the dojo guys, that's an undercard match. So I'm pretty sure the established stars are going to win that. I'm assuming Billy Gunn is going to be wrestling in the match and not the acclaimed. Because I'm forgetting his name now, but he's injured. Because he's been in a wheelchair for the last few matches. So I'm assuming Billy Gunn's going to be wrestling in that one. But other than that, really all the matches, I mean, they look like they could go either way, but I'm pretty sure they're going to favor the AEW guys because, well, they're in the States, and then they'll probably do another show overseas in Japan where the New Japan guys will stand tall.
Yeah, not much else for me to add other than what I've been said. Looking forward to an entertaining show. And I like to be entertained with great wrestling, so don't let me down, folks, and I'm sure you're not gonna.
Yeah, that would take more effort would be
you have to be trying to screw this one.
Yeah, I don't see that as a possibility. The only thing that, and please don't let this happen because y'all are going to blame me, but the only thing that could cause that if there was like a power outage at the arena or something. And in terms of the title matches and all that, who's footing the bill? Tony Khan. It's not a New Japan show. It's a AEW show with New Japan. So you're not going to see, you know, people are saying, oh, Tanahashi, wouldn't that be cool if he won the AEW interim world title? Because then we would get our eventual Tanahashi Punk match that we were supposed to get in the first place. Yeah, well, Tanahashi's already invited Punk to come to Japan so they can have that match at the January pay-per-view that they run, which is
Wrestle Kingdom.
Thank you.
That's their WrestleMania. Yeah, it's their biggest event.
Escaped my mind right as I was trying to say it. So plus Mox and Punk, just based on the history alone.
That's a great freaking match on paper right there.
Just for the promos, I'm here for it. So I want Moxley to win that for sure. So a great night ahead of wrestling. I can guarantee it. Knock on wood. Please don't let the power go out because y'all are going to blame me. Anyway, next week we will talk about Forbidden Door. We will be predicting Money in the Bank as we are taking on the first of two pay-per-views in the calendar month of July for WWE. But until then, thank you once again for listening, subscribing, and downloading, and we will talk to you next time. Thank you for listening to this episode. You can subscribe to the Wrestling Brethren podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcast fix to hear the latest discussion from the Wrestling Brethren. You can visit us at twbpodcast.com for posts and episodes. Visit the mothership, if you will, at behindthesquaredcircle.com, home of the Behind the Squared Circle podcast network. Let us know your thoughts, questions, and comments at Twitter at twbpshow, on Facebook at facebook.com/behindthesquaredcircle, and on Instagram at The Wrestling Brethren. You can follow Jarrett on Twitter at TheBaconRev, and you can follow Josh at SouthpawJosh. Thank you again for listening, and we will talk to you again soon with more from The Wrestling Brethren.